On the podcast today, we're going to dissect chapter 19 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 19th episode of the 81 meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
Give up sainthood, renounce wisdom, and it will be 100 times better for everyone. Give up kindness, renounce morality, and people will rediscover filial piety and love. Give up ingenuity, renounce profit, and bandits and thieves will disappear. These three are outward forms alone. These are not sufficient in themselves. It is more important to see the simplicity, to realize our true nature, to cast off selfishness and temper desire.
And sagacity, abandon knowledge, the people benefit 100 times. And benevolence, abandon righteousness, the people return to piety and charity. And cunning, discard profit, bandits and thieves no longer exist. These three things are superficial and insufficient. Thus, this teaching has its place. Show plainness, hold simplicity, reduce selfishness, decrease desires. This chapter continues on from the last chapter, for those who are familiar with this series. So from chapter 18, we spoke about what happens when the Tao is forgotten.
Yes.
And so this kind of carries on that kind of general theme, and Lao Tzu kind of explores the idea of, well, not the idea, but how the world is warped when we have a contrived wisdom and when it's forced, right?
Yes, Lao Tzu being big critique of Confucianism. And again, here all these virtues that he mentioning, sainthood, wisdom, kindness, morality, ingenuity, profit, all these are actually belongs to Confucianism virtues. That is more so to, let's say, forced and contrived ideas. Again, being sage-like or sainthood, when it's forced, it's only going to become more unnatural to us, right? And that's precisely the Lao Tzu's point. So to find our true nature is to be with the Tao.
Yeah.
To be completely natural. And again, going back to the simple nature of our own existence, really.
Yep. Yeah, that's the root philosophy of Confucius, right? The five virtues. And as we've discussed in other episodes before, though Lao Tzu, it does critique Confucianism, it's almost like he is speaking to us, addressing us directly across millennia, right? When we look at the teachings of the Tao Te Ching. So definitely in this day and age, posturing is a big problem, right? So not just sage-like, like he's not just critiquing sages here, he's kind of critiquing anyone who has this sense of fakeness and have taken on, well, in his case, taking on those five virtues as their kind of state of mind, when it's actually an external system that they've downloaded and that's how they behave. And Lao Tzu is completely against that, being a naturalist, saying that we have to, in some sense, rediscover our original mind. Actually, all of the great internal paths, no matter whether it's Taoism, Vedanta, or Buddhism, are all about rediscovering our original mind or our original nature. And so in this one, you know, there is the call back to simplicity, but we have to recognize that in especially in our world, there are a lot of people posturing, pretending to have the wisdom and knowledge. We see this with some spiritual teachers. We see this with politicians. We see this with news anchors. It's across the board, right? We see this. And so Lao Tzu's warning us not to fall for such displays of fakeness, because we can be then manipulated by distortions and half-truths.
100%. Nowadays, you can put any kind of picture or videos up on social media and you can pretend to be whatever you want to be, really. And that precisely aligned with very much like Confucian philosophy,
yep.
Funny enough. But in the end, I think this only harms us in the end. It harms humanity, harms individually, of course,
yeah.
harms humanity, and also it harms, in the end, our nature.
Yep.
Because we're trying to warp our nature from forcing to be such way,
yep.
right? Yeah, like you said, a lot of people try to posture themselves to look certain way, let's say to be like a self-claimed guru or spiritual master and whatnot. And it's all, we know it's pretentious and we shouldn't fall for their display, really. And we need to start living it instead of trying to show off, and you just try to get a quick dopamine hit from likes and good comments and things like that. These things are also pretentious. And again, to mention these five Confucius virtues, which are benevolence, righteousness, manner, wisdom, loyalty, and filial piety. And again, let's say, for instance, loyalty or filial piety. Loyalty only should be mentioned when there is no longer loyalty, right? Again, filial piety is the same. Yep. When there is no longer peace within the family, love within the family, then this idea and concept of filial piety comes in. That's, again, very reflective to the Far Eastern Asian countries of today, like China, Korea, Japan especially. And in those countries, filial piety and loyalty being very like a forced, and try to influence people with those virtues, again, artificial, because there's no longer love in the within the family and within the community.
Yeah. I speak about an effortless living, the virtue of the non-virtuous, say like the proper Taoist sage who is not out there putting on displays of piousness, charity, benevolence, righteousness, filial piety. As you were mentioning, like, it's ironic because, and we spoke about this a little bit in the previous podcast, is that like pretentious virtues emerge when the Tao is forgotten. So when we forget the way, then benevolence and righteousness emerge. They are, it's a forced way of behaving. Lao Tzu's argument is that inherent within us, we're already good. We don't need to have a contrived version of righteousness and benevolence. And you see this all throughout history, where we see the hypocrisy of, let's say, social justice movements, for example, where you'll see people who will fight for a certain cause, but then you'll find them behaving a certain way that runs counter to that. And we've seen that all throughout history. And this kind of didn't begin, but it was highlighted when Lao Tzu was critiquing Confucius himself, basically, and Zhuangzi did as well. Zhuangzi, particularly in the Robert Zhe story in the Zhuangzi text, Robert Zhe highlights the complete hypocrisy of Confucius, you know, because Confucius is one of the greatest hypocrites of all time when you understand what Confucius was trying to do, especially if you read the Zhuangzi. Like, Zhuangzi really pulls Confucianism apart.
Yes.
And so, you know, even though Confucius may appear moral and righteous, you know, on the other hand, he's caught doing what he often condemns. That's the problem, right? Yes. So often when we find someone who's trying to change the world according to their own agenda, or say a social justice movement, they might condemn everyone, but then they are often caught doing exactly what they condemn.
Yeah, exactly. With the Robert Zhe story, for people who don't really know about, do you like to just shortly?
Yeah, Robert Zhe in the story was a cannibal. Yeah. So he was a... So Zhuangzi has a clever way of sort of highlighting the gross parts of life. But he does it in a very playful way. I mean, if you're a very sensitive person or emotional person, and you have too many moral virtues in your mind, then the Zhuangzi is definitely not for you. But if you're at ease in yourself, then you can read the Zhuangzi, and
you can take some humorous.
You can things. Take because it is funny.
Yeah.
And in the Robert Zhe story, Robert Zhe is this carnivalesque figure who's away from society, and he's a robber. Confucius has this idea that he can go and reform Robertia, and then Robertia just absolutely scolds him. It's an intellectual beatdown of the ages. When you start to read the story, he just pulls him apart, saying how hypocritical he is, condemning people for their own natures and following their own virtues. And he kind of really targets the role dynamic that we find in Confucianism, as you mentioned with the five virtues, right? In Confucianism, you have to sleep a certain way, you have to dress a certain way to fulfill your role. As crazy as that sounds, right? Women have to bind their feet. It gets pretty crazy. And Lao Tzu and Zhuangzi obviously critique Confucius in this sense. And in the Robertia story, Robertia highlights all of that, saying that he's the greatest hypocrite of all time, and kind of says, why do they call me Robertia when they should call you Robert Confucius? Because you're robbing them of their naturalness.
Mm.
You're robbing people of their naturalness.
Mm.
He's like, I'm not a robber deep down. I understand the zero perspective, but I'm fulfilling my role as a robber. Because it's targeting that role dynamic, because the roles in Confucianism are insincere, right?
Then, yes.
Hans Georg Maweller talks about this a lot in Genuine Pretending, about the regime of sincerity. And you still find that regime of sincerity in the modern day, right? Someone may have a job at Wall Street and they start to behave like the Wall Street environment and this and that. But the genuine pretender, according to Zhuangzi, is the person who can differentiate between, this is just my role, but I know my true nature, my original mind, or the zero perspective, as Zhuangzi would put it. So,
yeah, it's interesting that, again, the regime of sincerity is something I think it's very important for all of us to understand. The people think that being sincere and having sincerity is something really good and something you should have and you should be sincere. But in deep down, sincerity implies that you are not sincere at the same time.
Yep.
That's why you are keep promoting this virtue of being sincere, really. So, again, in the end, it can only warp our own nature because it eclipses sincerity. The very effort and force of being trying to be sincere is eclipsing your nature. That's where the hypocritic personality you unknowingly you develop, right?
Yep.
That is the problem actually throughout the world nowadays. Mm-hmm. Being sincere and fulfilling your roles and duties are only building your own walls in your mind.
Mm.
You just restricting yourself just trying from being who you really are, right?
Yep.
Robertia being naturally being a robber.
Yeah, and a cannibal. He was eating human liver when Confucius...
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But that's the humor of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, but that's where our nature should let it present itself, right?
Mm.
So that's why we have so much pretentious people.
Mm.
Not that they are trying to be pretentious, but I think these walls that they built in their mind, how they should be and how they should look certain way and how they should present certain way, it's only building their own restrictions and just the walls in their mind so that they just they can't bring that nature, true nature, out naturally because they're, in a sense, they're conditioned in that way.
Well, the sincerity becomes just like benevolence and righteousness. It's a forced display. And it's actually built on the role you have or the persona that you've accumulated through socialization. And this is what Lao Tzu's point is. He's like, innately we're all, and Zhuangzi's point, innately we're all sincere anyway. You don't have to learn sincerity. It's there. You don't need a regime of sincerity. So Confucius developed like a socio-political economic system, right, which has sincerity built into it with benevolence and righteousness and filial piety and so forth. And so our sincerity then becomes a fake sincerity somewhat because You're sincere according to your role, according to your conditioning.
Yeah.
So that's not real sincerity. That means your sincerity is built on your ego. It's not built on your original face, your original mind. It's built on your ego. So that's not real sincerity. You're just trying to protect the upkeep of the ego that you've developed in this life and the role that you have, but that's not what sincerity is. I mean, it is sincerity according to that ego.
Yes.
That you believe you are, but it's not real sincerity because it's not genuineness. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, as you know firsthand, and we've met lots of people over the years, and there will be some people that we meet that you can tell the insincerity in their behavior and their voice because they know that I teach Eastern philosophy. So sometimes some people will try to put on a display of being someone that they're not, and you can see right through it. And a lot of our more pure interactions come from people who are just very genuine and humble.
Yes.
And speak on a very human level. And I found this with even other teachers. And that, again, becomes... See, spirituality then becomes a role somebody takes on board.
Right.
And Taoism itself, and say Vedanta and Buddhism, are technologies to get rid of the roles, to get rid of the ideologies. So you can come back and rediscover your original mind, and you can live from that place instead of promoting your role, your ego, and putting on a display of fake and sincerity and authenticity. I mean, it's fake, it's insincere, and it's inauthentic.
I think the reason why nowadays so many people are suffering from depression and anxiety and panic attacks and all these kind of psychological diseases because of that. The fake sincerity is been way hyped up now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the world where we are living, is a way you look and how you behave certain way is being very important, so that people are probably overly contriving their own manners.
Yep.
Even try to look certain way so that even adjust their personalities in some sense. Again, we know that's not sincere, that's a fake sincerity, right?
Yep.
And but people unknowingly, unconsciously trying to be someone they're not because they think that's how they're going to be valued by society and other people. But from that very process, people build this very unconscious anxiety, I think, right? Because they can't be themselves. Because they have that fear if they are honest and being themselves, they might not get liked or they might not become popular, right? That's the kind of fear nowadays people have. But that only going to bring more anxiety and more depression. There's something that's, you know, we sense that if there's something not right about yourself, right? And that anxiety and depression and not being content and fulfilled is coming from overly being fake sincere nowadays.
Yeah. We've seen this a lot because we've lived in Asia. Like, say, if we go to Tiruvannamalai, a lot of people will try to mimic Bhagawan, Sri Ramana Maharshi. So a lot of people will try to mimic Ramana, and you can tell it's fake. Like the thing is that it's good to have the image of Ramana in your mind and in your heart, but you don't want to try and mimic him, like the actual person that he was. You want to allow the teachings to soften your character, it's the water analogy in Taoism, right? Like your personality and your character and your belief systems, that's like a rock in your mind. Spirituality is like the spiritual water, slowly wearing away that rock, softening your heart, softening your glare, as Lao Tzu says.
Mm-hmm.
And so you truly become humble and open and receptive to the world, as opposed to having opinions and beliefs. And moving from one role to the other, this is what Zhuangzi's point is, right? Like, someone could be on Wall Street, have this role, they realize it's a role. they find spirituality, and the next minute they create this spiritual role. This is the problem. And so they might try to pretend to be Bhagavan, or you've got to have your own sense of it. Like, obviously, when you find spirituality, your personality, your character, your ego will begin to soften, but there'll still be idiosyncrasies in that about yourself that are just completely innocent. It's just, that's the li. That's the organic pattern of the universe. That's your grain of wood that you are. Mm. It doesn't mean we all start behaving the same. Like, there was this phenomenon back 10, 15 years ago. You and I know this because we knew a girl who complained about men who found New Age spirituality, and they all started talking like this. Like, and it was very put on to, in some sense, some of the guys were doing it to try and attract females. But the females were like, we actually still like, we are attracted to real men, mm-hmm. not people putting on a fake voice because they found spirituality. And most teachers who teach spirituality don't speak like that anyway. They're still themselves. If you go and listen to, say, Swami Sarvapriyananda, he's still the same Swami Sarvapriyananda he was when he was a teen. But what's coming through him is of a different magnitude than when he was a teen.
Yes.
And his personality and his character has softened since he was a teenager. Mm. And likewise, anyone else who finds this. The problem is when you start to put on those displays, those roles. And that's the trick for anyone who's, the tricky terrain for anyone who finds spirituality, particularly Eastern spirituality.
Mm. And I think there is a strong mental behavioral pattern that we need to kind of break through when we are talking about roles, for instance.
Yeah.
Like when you were a Wall Street banker, that you take that role on board very deeply, right? Mm. And you play that role. But let's say that individual found the spirituality and that now they're trying to bring that role into their heart, right?
Mm.
But there is that similar mental behavioral pattern in a sense that whatever role they take on board, they can't go beyond the role itself.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, they can't live it.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. There is that kind of mental behavioral that we've accumulated for so long, but eventually, especially in a spiritual path, that you have to break it all away. You gotta really dissolve it all.
Yep, you can still play your role, but as you gotta realize, is that all roles are played; they're not you. So there has to be, if we use a Vedantic perspective, a distance from that person who's pretending to be the Wall Street banker and this and that, and actually who you truly are. It's not that you don't want to make sort of a split in your mind, but you have to really realize that that is being played and it's not actually who you truly are. And a lot of people who find spirituality actually start to learn this because they may be in a job that they don't like, which a lot of us in the world find ourselves in, but you discover Eastern spirituality, and at night you're studying Eastern spirituality. You may be reading texts on it or watching videos related to it. But then the next day in the morning, you're back in the office or the factory around a lot of people who are, in some sense, unconscious.
Yes.
So you have to behave a certain way in that environment. Because you start to behave like a sage, you might be fired overnight. But so you have to get, as Zhuangzi said, skillful and trying to like be that role in that environment. But once that environment is not there, I mean, but you still have to stick to your practice in those places. But, you know, you have to be a certain role to fulfill that certain expectation. Mm-hmm. Like if you are on Wall Street, if you start meditating on the floor, people are going to be like, what is he or she doing? Kick him right out.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you go there and you just do your job well, and then once that's behind you, you can just put it behind you and move on to really living, then that's what's important.
That's what it means to be a genuine pretender, as Zhuangzi would say, right? Not genuine pretending.
No.
That means you're taking your role as you, right? But if you are aware that you are only playing the role for the time being, that means you are a genuine pretender,
yeah,
right? That you, like, a little bit like being a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
You can be this and you can be that easily because you don't, you're not attached to the role. Mm. You don't attach the role itself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can just be easily move from place to place and being from being yourself and you that you are really aware of that that is only a role that you're playing for that moment.
Yes. And the as you said, love, the best genuine pretender or a genuine pretender is they're not attached to the role, so they have variation. They can move from role to role and they're not attached to that role. And so when some people, when they leave their job, they get upset and this and that because they've assumed a role and then that's taken away then. And so what it does is it kind of attacks your character, your ego, because you thought that this well, a lot of people think their job makes up a big part of who they are. And a job can just end just like that.
Yes.
You can be fired overnight. But it's how you deal with it and can move on to the next role, whatever that next particular role will be. That's where you become a genuine pretender. You're not attached or associated to it. And it's just like I go from one to the other and you can just walk from one room to the next room without having any struggle or suffering from that.
Mm.
And that's what a proper genuine pretender does. So we just got to get out of that habit of overly identifying with what we do and who we think we are. And then we can move through life efficaciously. That's the point of Taoism, trying to help you to move through life efficaciously. And
I mean, the attachment plays a big part, isn't it?
Because
sometimes attachment can be very subconscious, unconscious, and you start caring about things and overly care about things, and in the end you find yourself, you're carrying that problem around with you, even at home and even anywhere you go. So that attachment can attachment can be very intelligent itself in a way that it can play you, right?
Yep.
But we shouldn't be played by the trick.
No. No, we shouldn't. And that's a big part of what this chapter is about. We're trying to get out of that fake sincerity, trying to get out of that role that we've accumulated that we think we are, where we confuse ourselves and we can be led down the garden path. As Lao Tzu points out in this chapter, is that particularly from the Confucian perspective, people who take on Confucianism, lock, stock and barrel, can be confused and led down the garden path by half-truths, distortions, fake benevolence, righteousness, and so forth, right? And so this can lead to, you know, three types of loss of Tao, which Derek Lynn talks about, which is, you know, we can be fooled by lies and half-truths, we can end up with hypocrites as spiritual leaders, which we spoke about, and we can essentially get ripped off by, you know, believing in such displays. And so Lao Tzu's, you know, and the great thing about the Tao Te Ching and about Taoism in general is Lao Tzu's not saying that we can heal people of these problems, but what we can do is we can learn how to navigate these challenges in life, these tricky terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about pulling back and not investing so much into worldliness and desires. That's when we start to come into contact with the Tao. I saw a documentary on hermits a long time ago, and one of the ladies that Red Pine, Bill Porter, met, she was living such a simple life up in the Jong'an Mountains in China. And she was saying, I still have too much. I'm still a little bit disconnected from the Tao. And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what she thinks about us all living in the city and working our 9-to-5 jobs. But she's taking it to the nth degree on as Lao Tzu talks about in this chapter, about coming back into simplicity, coming back into like a real raw naturalness without an urge or without stoking the fire of desires and wealth and greed and that too much. where I think that we can stoke a lot of that too much. A lot of people, for example, say if they want to make $100,000 a year, but they only make $50,000 a year, they'll go and get two more jobs. And you're completely disconnected from the Tao. And the argument would be is that you could reduce your $50,000 a year job to work on something that has value for you, that may eventually make you $100,000. But the other way is unsustainable.
Yes.
You can't keep that going, because if you're working three jobs a day, you're likely only getting 4 hours sleep a day, and you're going to burn out. So the paradox is, if I do less, I may attain more. You're not guaranteed, obviously. You know, the Tao loves and nourishes all, but does not lord it over us. So, but you've got to put your life in that perspective. You've got to align yourself with the Tao,
yes,
to allow the Tao to move you how it wants to move you. And so then you have to really, especially for people listening and watching the podcast, is reorient. What's your focus in life? Is it having that $100,000 a year job? Or is it aligning with the Tao? And however your life unfolds, it unfolds. But there's a real effortlessness to your life.
Yes.
It's not forced. It's not contrived.
Mm.
And you're just living as one with the river.
What makes us finding so hard to give up things in life is the absence of trust. So Lao Tzu always saying, going back to your true nature, your nature is where everything is, really, and that's where you should reside in, right?
Mm.
And that's based on complete trust of yourself and the nature. But as we know, Confucianism is quite completely opposite. First of all, the fundamental perspective on human beings of Confucius is fundamentally bad. We are fundamentally bad.
Beast,
yes, that's right. That's why we need to carve and polish, right? Carve and polish analysis coming in, because he didn't have any trust within nature and humanity, right? The absence of trust drives us to get 2-3 more jobs to get 200,000 a year, target.
Exactly.
Right. Instead, if we were to trust in what we are doing in our own process, and probably $100,000 might not be your target at all. Your target is to fulfill your own desires from deep down, from living from the heart, living the most natural way possible that you could live, could be your real goal, right?
Yeah.
Because you do trust yourself most of all. You do trust your life. You do trust the kind of life that's given to you. And Tao is, yes, a nourishing us all. It does not load over us. So all we need to do is just to follow it.
Yeah.
We need to follow with the complete trust, and that's what's missing.
Well, there's only the Tao.
Mm.
And this is the realization that Lao Tzu and Zhuangzi are trying to point to. There's actually only the Tao. And if you look at Vedanta, there's only Brahman. You know, there's only that energy moving our life, and you can either align with it or you can force it and fight it. The river is a good analogy, right? You're fighting the river, you drown. But if you just let go and allow the river to guide you where it needs to guide you, that's that virtue of the non-virtuous. You're not trying to be virtuous, you just naturally are virtuous.
Yes.
And I spoke to a 95-year-old lady the other day, and I asked her, because she's still out and about, lives in her own home still. She's not in a retirement village. She thinks that retirement village is such a stupid idea. And she just always kept herself healthy. And I asked her what her secret was to longevity. And she said, not having stress. I never worried about money a lot. I just thought my life was in its right place at all times. Kind of like there's a documentary with Charles Bukowski, the famous poet. And Bukowski said a pretty enlightening thing where he said, the universe has always just kept me in my right place.
Mm.
And I'm really grateful for that. Mm. Like I could have had this, I could have had that, or I could have been a beggar, but it's always just kept me just where I need to be. And that was kind of her perspective, that the Tao, she didn't use the word the Tao, but her life was just sort of, she trusted life, as you were mentioning, and there was kind of an effortlessness to it, and her life is still going.
Yes.
And she said the saddest thing is that she's outlived all her friends, so she still has a younger sister. Who knows what a younger sister is? Probably 90. A couple of girls on the town. And then, but like, just that she didn't, she said she didn't chase money. She didn't chase a life that was not meant for her.
Right.
And I think that's what burns a lot of us out. We may see someone, right, like someone who is wealthy and successful, and we think, well, why can't I do that?
Mm.
And look, I agree, you could probably do that. But that person got there for a certain reason, because the universe has a different plan, so to speak, for that individual. If you're not there or you can't get there, you may have to accept a few things that maybe something else is here for life for you.
Right.
And plus, I can tell you that probably that successful person, rich person, has no inkling of what the Tao is. Because that's what true wealth is. The true wealth is understanding this, is understanding and having that feeling and knowing of the oneness of the Tao, moving everything in its right place. Does the rich person know that? Does the crazy philosopher like Confucius trying to inculcate fake virtues know that? No, and Confucius, Lao Tzu talked about that, how these people are trying to induce the Tao, but you can't induce the Tao. The Tao is already inherently natural to us.
Yes.
And so some of us have to come to the conclusion, like the 95-year-old lady I spoke to, that if you want to live a long life, she never had depression, she said, she never suffered anything like that, because she just let go and allowed life to be as it will.
Yes. Yeah, we just need to allow things to be as it is, isn't it? And also, it takes some sort of courage to accept things, I think.
Yep. Definitely.
We need to be courageous enough to accept ourselves.
Yep.
You know, you want it to be like an Incredible Hulk, but if you were born with the short legs and chubby body, then you gotta accept that you can probably never be Incredible Hulk. But maybe universe has better plan for you, right? You need to accept the life as it is and always seek something that you can eventuate the best as who you are, who you truly are.
Yeah, that's why I love Bukowski's comment, because I really think that's a great insight for people. It's as you said, accepting who you are. Like you said, I want to be the Incredible Hulk, but I'm short, I'm stocky, you know, I'm a bit chubby, I'm a kapha, you know, to use Ayurvedic lingo. But there's no way I can be Incredible Hulk. And it's like, well, there's better comics than that anyway, so pick your poison, you know.
Exactly.
So, and like you said, there's probably something, and there is something much greater for you out there than just being Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
There's what's so great about being muscular and massive and this and that? I mean, what's your heart saying? What's the depth of your being? I don't care how you look on the outside. This is just a meat suit to hold the one consciousness as a vehicle to express itself.
Yeah, you might have something more, something deeper to offer for other people, which is really lacking the world.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows, yeah. You might be interested in what we are interested in. And I don't see what could be more important than realizing your true nature. There's nothing more important. That's why when you and I came to this, when we were young, we never ever veered away from it.
Yes.
And we had a lot of trust. We both left good paying jobs back in the day, 12 years ago, 13 years ago. I had already started this before that, but then there was an urge to immerse ourselves even deeper into it. Quit. Went and did it.
Yeah, again, for us, decision wasn't very difficult, to be honest.
No,
it was
a
pretty easy transition, because we... That calling was very strong, and we knew what we had to do. So, yeah, again, finding our own true nature, going back to simplicity, the simplicity of nature, and the innocence of nature is something that we need to regain, I think.
Yep.
And the innocence is as much as Tao itself is innate to all of us.
Mm. Yep.
Like, which infants aren't innocent? Really?
All. Yeah.
But because of socialization, education, all these things shape us certain way, condition certain way, and we kind of forgot that what innocence is and how it was like to be innocent, really, right? Yeah. But I personally think the innocence itself is great intelligence itself because that innocence is only... the quality that allows you to see the world the way it is. If you're not innocent, if your mind is polluted and full of dust, just like a dusted mirror, you can't reflect on things as clear as it could, right? Mm-hmm. Just like that. Innocent, if you lose innocence, then you won't be able to see yourself as truly you are, of course, and the reality and the people around you. You always want to manipulate the things in a way to suit your own narrative, suit your own polluted point of view of the world, right? Again, that quality is something that we learned a lot overseas, especially places like India, Nepal, and the rural Thailand, right? The people, the grown people are so innocent. It feels like you're surrounded by so many gods around you, really, you know, and it has a huge, huge, powerful effect on people.
It definitely does. The psychology, as you said, particularly in South Asia, the people, because of the great knowledge, their hearts are so soft, their minds are not as rigid as a Westerner's mind, and they're so innocent. I remember first going to India and dropping into Calcutta and just sitting on Sutter Street, sipping a chai out of a clay cup. And because I have that innocent sort of nature for myself as well. I wasn't really overly socialized as a young person. So everything for me was just wonderful, you know what I mean? Like, because I come from Australia where everything is so meticulous. And then you go to India and there's a real beauty to it. And it was just amazing to me, like strangers talking to me and, you know, asking me questions about things. And like, it was just a reality I had never experienced. And the fire was stoked, you know, like, and so like my love for India has lived on and we will return soon. And that innocence, all of us still have deep down is the point. But we go so far away from the Tao, we forget the Tao.
Yes.
And so... Lao Tzu's medicine in this is to return to show plainness, hold simplicity.
Yes.
You imagine this day and age. I want you to be plain. And it's like, but everyone's out there trying to be someone. Isn't it strange, right? Like, and so Lao Tzu and Taoism go to the point that you should make no effort to be flashy or... drastically different to draw attention. You know, everyone these days are dressing a certain way or may get tattoos all over themselves or piercings everywhere. And look, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. The problem from a Taoist perspective is you're still going further and further away from actually your original nature.
Yes.
And you're trying to actually, in some sense, draw attention to yourself. Now, look, I know that there's a lot of cultures out there that have tattoos and piercings as part of their culture. That's not what we're talking about. Mm. Everyone knows what we're talking about. We're talking about the way it's kind of happened in society in general, where people are constantly trying to draw attention to themselves. Social media hasn't helped this. And so you're going further and further away from plainness and simplicity. And this is a big problem, right? So this goes into everything, the way people try to present themselves, the way people try to speak. They'll always try to, in some sense, make themselves stand out in front of the crowd. Some do unconsciously, but there's some people who do it consciously too.
Yes.
And That's the point, right?
Well, there is a deep-seated insecurity of being who you truly are then, isn't it? Again, like you said, there are certain cultures that embracing tattoos and dye hair color in a certain way,
yeah, piercings
and whatnot. Again, it's nothing wrong with it. But when we see more and more people are doing it, I would question it.
Yeah. Like, 'cause culture's driving it.
Yes, that's right. And people, we were all, once upon a time, being our early 20s, late teens, you know, we wanted to stand out. We wanted to be different, right? And the culture is driving that, right?
Yeah.
But nowadays, what the problem is that insecurity seems to become much deeper than how it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the culture itself is motivated by the insecurity.
Yeah. As Terence McKenna said, culture is not your friend. And we're talking here about pop culture, not inherent ancient older cultures. And what is really worrying is that the tech companies, the government, the media, the corporations, they fuel this. And so what they're actually fueling on a psychological level, and people need to realize this, all of you listening and watching need to realize this, is that they're saying to you that you are naturally not good enough.
Yeah.
You are naturally, you don't belong. So what should you do if you are not good enough and you don't belong? Well, you have to make yourself a certain way to draw attention to yourself, to prove to the fake culture that you are someone that you do belong.
Mm.
This is already the worst starting place we could go from.
Yes.
It's inherently destructive to psychology. And I'm seeing this with young people who will do anything to draw attention. They'll dress a certain way. They'll do anything to themselves to draw attention.
It's somewhat almost like cultural approval, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And all of these corporations and governments and the media and social media that are fueling this should hang their head in shame because they're destroying the psychology and the future of the world. You listen, anyone listening and watching this right now, you are good enough. You do belong inherently. You don't have to do anything to yourself. The way you were born is beautiful.
Yes.
That's the way of the Tao. That's how nature presents itself. What culture is trying to do is not nature, because the people are not in sync with the Tao. They've forgotten the Tao, and they're driven by motives of profit, of causing division within society. These are different motivations than the Taoist motivation. Because the Taoists understand that the universe is fundamentally one. There's only the Tao. And to align with that means to come back to plainness and simplicity. As best as you can.
Yes.
It doesn't mean you won't get a piercing or a tattoo, but it means you don't have to cover yourselves in piercings and tattoos.
Yeah.
That's the difference, right? It's that you're not so attracted to gaining attention and social approval. Because you don't need it. You are so confident within yourself that you don't have self-esteem problems. A lot of people look to celebrities, right? And they go, I want to be like these actors and this and that. And then if you study psychology, a lot of the actors who become actors actually, or from the get-go, have self-esteem issues. They want to get social approval. They want to be somebody.
That's why maybe they went out and look for more attention.
More attention, exactly. They're not comfortable to be the rural Indian farmer just tilling away at his peanuts or his cashews and very happy.
Yes.
And you and I have met many farmers in India that in some sense are the happiest people in the world.
100%.
And so Lao Tzu's really telling us to return to simplicity, plainness, decrease our desires. Shanti, shanti, shanti.
That all has to be done.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to do, is it?
No, it's once our motivation changes and trying to empty yourself, empty your cup, then it'll be pretty easy. Job is going to be much easier then.
Exactly. Okay, guys, thank you for watching, and we'll see you guys next time.